Okay, so welcome. We will, my agenda just talks about our assessment of software packages and our job candidate resourcing.
We might just mention the recording of the meeting too. Thank you to those who did reply to my email. But this looks like this will be the last recording I do unless there's more interest shown.
Fair enough. So LibMesh. I guess I wrote LibMesh here just because I was making it. I wrote down on my little agenda LibMesh, CM, and Sundance is the three things that we've been trying to test against our test problem. I don't think we discussed LibMesh quite a lot last week. I don't know if there's any more to say about it. So that gets to then CM.
Good news for CM is that actually it does seem to run pretty efficiently when you solve a group X CM problem. This ran this morning. So for the 200 by 200 problem, by the way, there's a limit of 4 iterations in the conjugate gradient solver at each solve step.
Just to make it not do work.
The idea was that tolerance checks may vary between solvers, and what this might be a good way of making them all do the same thing. Some solvers jump out with an error at the maximum number of iterations, which is sort of reasonable too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Which is what Sundance does.
For 4 iterations of that, and we've done 50 time steps at a time set of 0.001, we've got 3.5 seconds to solve the problem. And that compares to 16 seconds for LibMesh. That's everything. Probably of this 3.5 seconds, 3/4 of a second was spent doing one assembly. So that sort of leads me to wonder how much time LibMesh is doing in its 50 assemblies.
So 16 is assembly. Sorry, 16 seconds for LibMesh proves their assemblage.
That's right, yeah. So we can sort of, at least we're in the sort of ballpark, but we haven't analysed LibMesh to work out if it's been real, if it is spending its time in assembly or not.
It does assemble, right? You do know that?
Because the same code that makes the right hand side does the metrics. For the 1000 by 1000 problem, it took 82 seconds and 20 seconds of accuracy to sit in the system and one metric.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And that compares with 380 seconds for the mesh, if it's 50 assemblies.
That's too bad for the mesh.
Say if we had 20 seconds per assembly, so that's a third of a minute per assembly, and then 50 iterations, then you'd expect 17 minutes, and we've got more like 6 minutes. So we're in the same ballpark, I think. And memory use was actually pretty similar too. We've got 1.1 gigabyte of resident for CM and 1.3 for LibMesh. The virtual memory is twice as much for CM.
How much in each case? The virtual memory is a little bit more, or twice as much?
So Lidmesh has a resident of 1.3, has virtual of 1.4.
Okay, oh, that's good. The first one I was asking, what was the overhang on both of you?
Whereas CN's got 2.6.
Not that that's really relevant. I mean, it shows you something about the wellness of the code. Waste of pages.
Is there any way that you can think that we could get rid of the assembly without actually writing much code? Maybe if we could mimic
the Lidmesh?
Yeah. If we could maybe assemble it the first time and then somehow put a loop around the solve?
Yeah, if we do our own assembly and store in a separate matrix or something, then
I'm just trying to think about doing it, testing it.
Yeah, can without writing.
It doesn't actually cause us to write new code. Like during a loop around the call to solve, just solving it 20 times.
You're talking about Lidmesh?
Yeah. So you
can you reset it the first time. Yeah, can you reset the solution
to be zero or something?
So without reassembling and without, well, no, you should force it to reassemble. You mean you've dropped out too much? You haven't assembled the right hand side.
So upper bound and lower bound.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
You're just not just counting the work to construct the right hand side. Because it doesn't seem like it's trivial. I mean, it's not. I mean, obviously we know how to do it, but it's not trivial to write an assembly that excludes. Maybe it is.
Well, I'd hope it wouldn't be too much work, and that might be something that we want to look at, the Lidmesh, and look at that we can actually.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing we need to know that we can do.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, that's positive. I guess we're in the same order of magnitude, and yeah, unfortunately, this assembly is blurring our estimation of that.
If we had that right, then we could really see something solid about the original CM with the CM with grid based.
I think it is worth running it. Can we reset the solution and just solve again?
What does that mean?
I'm just trying to.
You're almost in a steady state problem. You're basically not reassembling the right hand side. That's all you know, because you really wouldn't want to reassemble the matrix. And you just use the same right hand side every time. So maybe there's a steady state problem. You assemble the matrix. I don't know, though. Maybe it's all.
I can't think of an easy way to do it. To just use the same matrix and right hand side either. So so might as well investigate what we want to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you want to have you ask any questions to anyone here? Do you want to make that our first question and ask them?
I don't want to look like I'm just expecting everybody else to solve our problems for us. I want to have a look at it first.
No, I don't. You can ask for ideas. If I was working on Mesa 3D, right? Like, and I have done that. But before I go and make any changes to anything, I ask the guy, if I needed to do this, where would you tell me to look? Because that's exactly the advice that you'd want to get. Even if you say, okay, I'm prepared to do the work, I wouldn't want to do it. But getting the advice of them telling you where to look and how to go about doing that is crucial. Because otherwise you're going to go about, like, you know, I see all the time people submit patches to these open source projects and they've gone off on their own tangent about the way that, and guy says, no, you don't do that. If working within our framework, you'd never do anything like that. You do it like this. And if they'd asked that advice up front, the guy would have said, if you want to do that, do it like this, you know? And I think that is important.
I think there has to be a balance.
Yeah. I'm
kind of curl on this because I think it's essentially the example, right? Mm-hmm. There's all these examples, and the one example you're using is the time frame one. And I think you would want to create a new example, which somehow had maybe a flag in the assembly, which only assembled the first time. I mean, do you think it's changing code, source code, or are you think it's changing an example?
Hopefully only change example, but that's something to look at. So I'd first look at the documentation for the classes that I'm using. And
sure, that you can actually just do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I am up to date on the existing documentation, that seems reasonable to ask the developers about what's missing.
Yeah. Far more reluctant than me, but anyway, okay, fair enough. I just don't understand why we're being shy here.
The only reason I might do it for myself is just maybe they have a piece of code that does it, and they just haven't submitted it.
Yeah, but they're just as likely, and even if they haven't done, they're going to tell you how it will need to be done or what the level of difficulty is. They can give you advice. I just don't. Entering a dialogue seems vital at this point. And any excuse to start a conversation is a good one. I just really don't want to start going off down tracks that. No, everyone does it around here. You know, people start going off and using funny scripts that someone gave them once, and then they never ask anyone how should I be converting, renumbering my notes. You know. Because I don't know who to ask or what to ask.
I think we should also want to be a group that seen as we can actually put something into the project.
But it's, we're still just looking at it. I mean,
it's also a kind of, because if we do use LibMesh, we do want to obviously have
Yeah, I think we're most likely to establish that if we can demonstrate that we want to put something into it.
Demonstrate what, though? When are we going to start this conversation? I just can't see us ever starting it if we wait till we're ready.
I'm sure there will be questions about that.
Seems perfect to me.
It may be perfect if the existing documentation doesn't provide.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. You should look at what's already written there.
They say in that example that in this time's been a problem with the recent limited sort of time, which is not optimal, and can be or should be changed or something.
Yeah,
because they have a pretty lengthy description of when.
Did I mention that, but I...
Documentation, for that example.
I can't remember the exact wording we used. And I haven't got a network picture here.
I guess the other thing that's driving me here is I want to start this dialogue this week. I don't want to start it next month, because I've already said many times that
if that's what you want, then
we need to start figuring out whether this is going to work before we can make this decision. And I'm not waiting till Christmas.
Then we should jump to the point rather than picking.
I agree.
Okay.
I think the difference is saying, we've been looking at LibMesh and we're trying to do this, and we're wondering if you have any advice versus, we're about to extend or build a new software project, which was originally something called CM, which is a year.
So you'd write that whole question?
I'd explain where
I
we
think so, yeah. From.
Okay.
Instead of just starting to see some graduate students playing on the code.
I don't know.
Sounds a bit suspicious.
Yeah.
Versus right out front stating your intentions.
Oh, does it? Okay. Well,
we're looking at using your code, and we're testing and comparing it to other codes. Obviously, this example here is not set up. So.
Yeah, I mean, I listed a bunch. I mean, I did, off the top of my head, there was a bunch of things that we could ask about, and I didn't feel like you should ask all those questions in one email and just kind of dump them on them.
Oh, no, I wouldn't ask all those questions. I would just restate my...
Yeah, okay. Well, that's fine as well. I just, again, I think it is important that we try and figure this out before we can decide to adopt something.
I mean, by at least stating what we're trying to do, they might right away have something without us really asking tons of questions.
Yeah,
they might have advice, but they might say, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Well, that's what we need to find out.
The other question I thought of that we might not ask them is the dimensions that parallels them with the mesh was a goal, and I think for our large mesh problems it's going to be quite important that we can actually distribute the mesh.
We could probably survive that.
Given that it's probably only the geometry and it's not the cell state variables or something, then
you
might be okay not to modify some of the pressures.
Okay. Given that I've championed this idea, do you want me to compose an email, or are you happy to try
my one? I'm happy to. I'm happy for you too.
Oh no, you can then. And
do I think you have accounts on SourceForge?
Yeah, do you have accounts?
Sure.
Okay.
I may be less happy if I get told what to write.
No. I'm not going to tell you what to write. I just want to start a dialogue, and I think it's very important that we do. And if you want to write an email about just generally asking them whether they think using it for open seamless is a good idea, then that's fine.
Okay.
I don't mind.
Cool.
The problem I have with that is that we get those sort of emails about CMIS.
Okay.
You know, we're not, and in general, you know, like, people kind of, you know, that's why people come here to learn how to use CMIS, is because they're going to now solve, you know, all their world problems on CMIS, you know, and it's like...
But surely they've already asked someone about CMIS and they've said it's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm sure they have been told that. That's why I would tend to ask specific questions that showed a level of understanding on our part, and maybe that's why we should discount the question I was asking, because maybe it is written in the documentation. But a level of understanding so that we can show that we aren't just hoping that it's going to install into our Windows system and become, you know, Heart Simulator 1. You know, I mean, I just that's the sort of perception I get.
So instead,
I mean,
paint yourself. You're not developers, you're users, and you want a easy way to take their code and use it to solve your big problem.
Yeah.
Or they might say, oh, no.
Which is quite common, but I think we can paint a picture that's not there. We just have to say, you know, we talk about, you know, that we have developed a lot of software, and that we're looking at adopting a new framework within which we need to develop, and those are the sort of questions.
I mean, maybe not get into detail, Peter, and just say we're looking at adopting a new framework.
And when you can obviously give them links back to what we've written over the last 6 months, and they can see that we've been mucking around for 6 months about this. We're interested.
No, I agree, they're getting on. We're making progress.
Yeah,
since
we've
minimized the group to three.
Yeah, I totally agree. I strongly argued for that at the first.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were around, but at the PI meeting as well, I had invited all these people on the group, but I was very unhappy about it. And I thought that it made the group dysfunctional. I thought it meant And people said, oh, just don't worry, they won't come. And I was going, okay, well, why am I inviting? So on and so forth. They'll stop coming out for a while. Nah, I always told it to these people's faces at the time. Okay, and I think we're working on the right thing at the moment again. We spent too long working on some other things. Sundance. So, we did talk about CM. Thanks for that, Carol. And it is heartening, at least, that it's doing that. We got CM to run in a functional way as well. But that has to be true.
Well, it's really interesting to see the difference of times too. And you used you saw the mono domain, right? Is that what you did?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, just your assessment then. I mean, we can take the... You're going to have to... Well, maybe you don't know, but in libmesh, to add active... You know, to make a bidomain or an add active cell model or something like that, you expect that to do that, you'll have to add new classes. I mean, is that...
I'm guessing not. It seems set up so you can have sort of either multiple values in the system or multiple systems in the problem.
Okay.
And the way we do it in CM is we have multiple systems, and it seems easy enough to take one transient problem and one static problem, which is what we do in CM. It may not necessarily be the right way to do it, but it seems fairly easy.
Okay.
On the surface state.
Okay, and then you just call out this LML and get it to solve separately.
Yeah,
I was wondering, could you then easily use CLML?
You just sort of call it from the...
It creates a Fortran file, which then
use that. Well, the new one creates C.
Okay.
I think it's actually going to C++ API instead of that.
There's a C++ API to the math that's represented by this LML.
Yeah.
If you ask it to generate code, I think it writes C.
Okay.
There is.
But if you can ask, I mean, it actually would not be hard to add new languages.
As long as
they have, were syntactically similar.
I'm not quite sure which LML we're talking about.
I was talking about Andrew Miller's.
Okay. And so is there an existing code that loads those shared libraries for you and then provides an interface to call them, or...?
That's Andrew Miller's kind of working on that thing at the moment.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. And Andre is supposedly trying, well, when he gets back to Singapore, supposedly, I think one of his tasks, I don't know whether it will remain one of his tasks, but what he was trying to do was work with Andrew so that he could use Andrew's code in CM. The code, the CLML that CM uses at the moment is an implementation written by Andre, which generates Fortran, generates shared objects, and loads those things in. And we could keep using that for the time being as well. There's nothing stopping us calling that one. You just have to add underscores to your CM.
What's the intended way of using Andrew Miller's one?
It's going to be the same.
So it doesn't care what language the shared library is, because you call it from that language of that.
But that's defined by the language as well. He isn't writing that. He's writing a code generation service, and it will spit you back source code, and then you do what you like with that source.
We're expected to compile.
Yeah, so you'll compile it yourself. Yeah.
Okay.
And so CMIS or OpenCMIS would then get back the string and create, wrap that in a little bit of wrapper code, compile a shared library, link back to that.
Okay,
and the exact structure of the wrapper code or whatever is up to us in with negotiation. I guess we can choose how content code is exactly. But
there must be some parameters saying I want to have this symbol name.
I'm not sure if all the directs forced on me. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
How many arguments it has.
Yeah, that's exactly the sort of thing. But that's the way I imagine it should be expected to keep working. So the actual all the generation of a shared library and stuff is still moving over to the client. Okay, so Sundance. So Monday and Tuesday I played with Sundance. Sundance does not have any high level time stepping objects, but Sundance does implement the C++ in a kind of a way that David Bulletin was always trying. I'll actually print out my C++. I don't know if you've seen it.
It's interesting comparing it to C, and when you've got sort of its own language. Okay, and you can either choose to, well, that's two ways of doing it, either code produces its own language or it uses an existing language and provides some functions in the existing language.
So, one, but I guess the guts in here is that, you know, we're defining our regions, so we have an interior and our edges and our boundaries, our left, right, top, bottom, whatever, just by defining some sort of equation on what satisfies those regions. We define a variational test function and our unknown function. We define operators, dx, dy, gradient, which is dx, dy. We find x and y, and then we just write our equation. So our initial conditions, we define sine pi x times sine pi y, and we project that onto a discrete discretization. So we say I want to get a grid of 100 by 100 or whatever.
So it's just free space.
Yeah, so somewhere I said that my discrete space.
So it's like the elements or something?
Yeah, that's the element. So I did a mesh up here, 200 by 200.
Oh, this is yours, actually.
Yeah. There was no example that did it. I found a 1D example that did time stepping, and by actually implementing it, you know, by writing an equation for it. And so I then adapted that to 2D, and it was also written in Sundance 1, which is quite different to Sundance 2, and I had to port it. It took me a day, so I was quite impressed that I could do all that in a day, and it took me a while to come to grips with these weak informants and of the integrals and stuff, but basically I've written integral of del of u, yeah, so I've got my operators here.
So that's the equation, the discrete equation.
Yeah.
And it's defined for the integral of the interior, that's the number of elements that are
going to integrate over that area,
so
yeah.
Step is del u.
So this is del u plus 1.
Oh, that's the gradient, del u gradient u plus.
See, so we're just doing del squared u del.
Wow.
So I've just written that,
yeah.
Literally. You know, but so we multiply by, you know, this what they call del with del u.
Oh, there's the
Yeah, so we've integrated this through to get a weak form or whatever it is. I don't understand this a little bit. But then... Yeah, and so we just explicitly write it in. And so I can change from doing implicit to doing Frank Nicholson just by...
Okay, so that's the right-hand side now.
I don't even write. Well,
oh, right, because you're not...
Yeah, it's...
Well, I mean, if you had a volume source, though, you'd have to...
I could just add it in here as well. Instead of adding anything in. In fact, I satisfy boundary conditions by either writing them here or just adding them into the equation.
You would have like plus, say, F times U.
Yes.
That would be your right hand side.
Which is exactly what I'm putting in for a boundary condition on the left or all around the perimeter, just put F times F star U. And that means equals zero. Well, I don't know. That forces it to be zero on all the time.
Where's BC enter the whole thing?
I'm not quite sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. They said you can add them onto here or just put them through here. I don't know. It treats it slightly differently, but it's functionally the same size. That was what I was led to believe by reading a bit of the explanations of some. So I didn't understand enough. So then I just have to set up a timestamp thing where I solve, copy the U naught, set that into be my U, and then finally I can calculate my deviation from the exact solution by writing the exact solution, integrate the difference, and with the square of the difference, print it out. Pretty nice. So I mean, I was impressed by the ability to get it to work. I was impressed by the fact that I could do something that's not intentionally implemented. They didn't intend you to write do crank Nicholson or something, but you could just write it functionally and it works. I was impressed by the fact, you know, I can just say I want to integrate against my, you know, my real function, and I can write my real function in a really, you know, in terms of X and Y, which are things that I just defined, you know, like I just said I wanted a degree of freedom, which was, you know, my naught coordinate, my Y coordinate. I want to call them X and Y, so that's nice. I can give them the names I want, and then I go ahead and define an expression based on that. I can integrate that expression, you know, using the quadrature scheme that I choose. This is the quadrature schemes used to be implied in Sundance 1 and Sundance 2. They allowed you to specify them.
These boundary conditions then, right here.
This is a left point test. So anything that's where the x naught is less than that is a left edge. Anything that for a Y naught is less than that is a bottom. And so we're just grouping points, edges, grouping edges from a thing of forming an edge group.
I think they do have. Did you write all this or did that?
No, this is in the guide example that wasn't.
Kivo is a little bit more difficult. You probably shouldn't use that very often because it is simple.
This is the integration in time. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
But that would just, you'd change it here and call it explicitly. Well, no, or you write a class.
There's more powerful ways to do it too, so the simplest way is that easy.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, no, this example.
So you can run this and compare the times then?
Yeah, so I've run it. I did write all the times into the wiki.
The same machine?
Yeah, so on BIOS 22. It's quite a bit slower.
Sort of doing things quite differently too. But we're not stuck
with the assembly.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't have to do my assembly.
Do you reckon?
Well, actually, I have no idea. It probably.
It may be doing it every time.
It could easily be doing it assembly.
I would think that a typical code would not do this assembly every time, but which is why I was surprised that there's. Can't fail.
No, we don't know what it's done. So the solution goes into the unit. So we're doing the solve at the start of that loop. So there's solve, and then we do get me the vector on a discrete. Get me the discretized form of that solution, and then set my unit, which is my initial state, to be that solution from the previous. Mm.
So you're calling solve again, so it all depends how much it changes
prompt.solve last time. Yeah, no, totally. Maybe it doesn't do anything. Initially I didn't know all these things that Carl was doing, because I didn't know what his step size was, how many time steps he was doing, and how many iterations he had. So I ran with 10 time steps and 2,000 iterations or whatever to converge to 1e-12 or something. And so then the solver dominates, as it was. And it was, I think, I can't remember now. You haven't got the internet.
I got a page here.
Oh.
It was in cache.
if you want to sort it.
Do you want to have a look?
It's all in the new wiki page.
Probably the last one might be.
Yeah, okay. This is the one where I actually tried to do a similar sort of a thing.
So you had two processes, and there's 60 or 70 iterations. So we're doing, say, 15 times as many iterations. Uh-huh. And if it's taking.
So
68 minutes. If you were to divide that by 15, then you come down to 4 or 5 minutes, which is in the ballpark.
Yeah.
The output seemed to say that it's spending most of the time in the solver.
But that one was with lots more.
Oh, that one's not. Oh, no, still with linear solvers. It's 1400 seconds.
Sure. So, and as I say, if I tie down the number of iterations to 4, it just dies every time.
Yeah.
That's a seek faults, which is over.
Oh, because it reaches max there.
It just reaches max.
Oh, seek faults.
Seek faults.
It's not handling something.
No, it's not handling it very well.
Okay,
so this all worked and it was nice, but when things go wrong, it does seem to seek faults a lot.
Mm-hmm.
at least by signaling, it brings down all the processes.
Yeah. Well, it's the same problem with CDN. When things go wrong, it seems to seek faults.
It's not going to be too surprising if we look at 3 or 4 different packages and they both are in the same ballpark, because I would think 15 years ago, if you did the same thing, you would see big differences, because C++ was a lot slower, but the typical convention.
The symbolic manipulation in here is hard work, though.
Yeah.
So there is definitely going to be an overhead to that, and an overhead to their ability to optimize. I mean, you could spend your time, which is the thing that I always advocated David could do. If David could get his code working at all, then we could write an optimizer to try and optimize the things that we need to do to get them to run fast, because you could go through and check for certain patterns or whatever and replace them with other things. We never got to that point in without any useful answer, so we never could start working on that project. But this thing here has got this overhead of, I've got the symbolic problem, how do I decide how to manipulate that?
Yeah, but I would guess
this is simple.
Not much symbolic is going on.
No. The only thing that's going on here, actually, because you can print out the CM step after it's done some symbolic manipulation, which is what it's doing here at every time step.
Yeah.
And it basically has just expanded out all the gradient operators and stuff, which is, when I first did this, that's how I wrote them, because I didn't know how it could, that you could tell it to do it as a proper list. You could list the two operators together and it would apply them.
So does it read those other guys? That's not symbolic.
So the compiler should be able to, well,
there's names, you have to use gradient.
No, I assumed that the gradient was a list of the X and the Y. So I just said, gradient is dx plus dy.
Dx being the derivative.
So I said what dx was.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good. This is the sort of thing that they've been trying to do.
Yeah.
Shane and I talked about that at the moment it does triangular and tetrahedral elements, but the old version of Sundance could do quads and cubes, but it seems he doesn't need them now, but should be easy to add them. The other issue, I noticed that you selected a Lagrange function here. Have you seen, is there anything else available apart from a Lagrange
basis function?
Because it's one thing to change the shape of your elements, another thing to sort of add sort of unknowns in different places.
Yeah, no, I wasn't sure whether I haven't seen any evidence of anything with extra degrees of freedom.
Okay.
There are some other basis.
Things like mesh refinement, it doesn't claim to be a mesh generator, does it? So
no, not at all. It says go and use some.
Does it have adaptive mesh refinement at all?
No, it's written down as something to be considered. Yeah, but I think, he basically says this isn't a mesh, go and use some other meshing program. I've worked too hard to be able to read in a bunch of different formats.
So what the mesh doesn't mesh?
It can do some basic mesh generation.
Cube.
Which is what we can do here. We can do a rectangle and we can do something else.
I think it has I can't remember that.
So it was interesting. I was quite pleased to be able to get it to work and work in parallel and everything, partly because I could look at your notes on what went wrong with LibMesh and set the same environment variables, and things kind of ran pretty sweetly for this as well.
Compiling?
It's laborious and long, but I just did what they told me to do and it worked. They said, right, this, if you want to use Trillionos, you told me this, right?
Yeah,
Trillionos with Sundance compilant like this, so that's what I did. And then it said, if you read compilant Sundance compilant like this, that's what I did. there are some things at Seafault. If I try and put n=4 into the problem I had at the bottom when no one was using it on Friday, it's Seafault. Somewhere early on. If I did n=3, I'm not sure.
Is it a processor?
There are certainly funny things going on. It seemed to have the same sort of problem that if you had just, you didn't have enough elements, because I had a one problem element that was the first thing I tried to NPI run and it ran on 3.
They would catch, I guess they would care a lot.
Yeah, I guess Seafault is a it's not very good one.
Maybe next week we can talk about what will, we haven't decided on using a pet package. We haven't decided on using a pet package, but we're getting closer to using it. We're saying that they're not quite as, they're not significantly slower than the outside world.
I like the beauty of Sundance, but I'm reluctant to kind of leap in there. I just don't know that anyone's using it in that sort of earnestness. It still feels more like some people's academic project rather than. But they're making a Sandia, how could they justify it?
Yeah.
Can they do that? Wouldn't they have to be actually using it on some of their projects? So it must be being used in earnest. I also get the feeling that
I think it's been around for a little while.
That there's quite a lot kind of hidden that's going on. Like I think
because a lot goes on behind the scenes.
I think the way that they're using it, they're probably not going to expound to us, and that it's probably been streamlined to work in the ways they wanted to work.
I think what happened is there were several groups for Linos, ML, which is the solver.
Yeah.
And there's another one. Yeah. And they were different groups.
Okay.
I think based around the same, there's a map group there. And I think they wanted to kind of bring it all together and send it in a way to be on top of those.
Yeah,
I think that's what happened.
ML's in showing us now.
So okay, so ML.
They pulled that into it.
Yeah.
And then some others you can show us. I think. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to do next with this framework then. I mean, maybe I have to do the same thing that I've been saying we have to do with Linux and start asking some questions.
Have you looked for Deepfoot's applications and so forth, or you just say you haven't seen any?
I was looking for anything that was Sundance and Transient or Sundance and a whole lot of different searches.
Okay.
And that, because I was trying to find some examples, because I had no idea how to start, given that none of the examples in the source tree were transient. There was no transient problems in there.
Okay.
I went, how on earth am I? Well, that's not true. There's transient Navier Stokes, but I didn't really want to go there. There's lots of Navier Stokes types of problems, so I was avoiding that. So I went, okay, how do I get this problem to be, you know, time stepping equation? And I did lots of different searches, and the one that I found was someone who's teaching it. They've obviously had some relationship to Sandy or something, but their class learns that it was a class problem. It was like their teaching notes. They've written several hundred pages of teaching notes, which has Sandy as flat at the front, but it came out of Carnegie Mellon. So they had this class based around it, and their problems were run this and that. And so this was the one where I found the one, this example that we ended up with. But it was all based around Sundance 1. And that was kind of like, I didn't find a lot more out there, you know? I was like, yeah.
I have a source book thing, right? Is there Sandia
Yeah, I can't tell you that. Whether their repositories are even available. I mean, it's LGPL, but I don't know whether repositories. Okay, I'll do a bit more of that sort of exploring this week.
So they have mailing lists?
Yeah.
It's got some advantages in the high level.
That high level operator manipulation, to some degree, is provided by ePetra, which is another thing that's been pulled into Sundance.
Yeah.
And it may be that you could pull it into other things. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you.
Element. I think E maybe stands for element.
Okay, but you might be able to take the ePetra side of things and use that with C++. As some sort of top level thing to generate stuff for LibMesh or something else.
Mm. Is it e-petra?
No, it's just all one word. E-P-E-T-R-A.
Or Petra relates to the Native American theme with Sundance.
As I said last week, I think it's unfortunate that it's called Sundance in terms of looking for web searches, because you just get so much pollution.
Did you do a scholar.google.com search?
No, scholar, yeah. See what publications it has. But yeah, there's so much crap called Sundance.
But that, I get the feeling that ePetra, does that handle elements and things? Like, I'm trying to work out what level that.
I don't know, but it just
those functions, test function,
they seem like they'd have to be Sundance things.
Well, they look like Sundance things. I'm trying to look at how ePetra knows about them.
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
Okay. I have 1 minute left. I should talk for 1 minute about these jobs. We should probably turn our recorder off.
Okay.